I'm the dude. So that's what you call me.
Are you a virgin?
Yeah, not since I was 10.
Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret.
Come out to the coast. We get together, have a few laughs.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Can I return it if it doesn't fit?
It always fits. Eventually.
Welcome back to Movie Mingle. I'm Caveman.
And I'm Maggie.
And we are doing our March bonus episode for St. Patrick's Day.
Hey!
And we have chosen the classic Irish film, Waking Ned Devine.
Oh, just such a perfect little movie. One of my favorites.
1998, directed by Kirk Jones. Kirk Jones also worked on Everybody's Fine from 2009, which has Robert De Niro, Kate Beckinsale, Sam Rockwell, Drew Barrymore. Haven't seen it. That cast makes me want to watch it. What to expect when you're expecting from 2012.
Yikes.
Was another one he did with Cameron Diaz and Dennis Quaid, Jennifer Lopez, and Elizabeth Banks.
You could not pay me to watch that movie.
And Anna Kendrick as well.
Yeah.
And Nanny McPhee, which I have heard good things about.
Nanny McPhee is so good.
Emma
Nanny
Thompson, McPhee Colin Firth, Kelly MacDonald.
So good.
Angela Lansbury.
Yeah, that movie is a perfect children's movie.
But before we get any further, as excited as I am to talk about Waking Ned Devine.
And me too. I love this film.
To anybody out there who celebrates St. Patrick's Day or just likes to have a shot of whiskey.
Or, you know, just likes the Irish. We say, Aaron Gopro.
Sláinte. And that whiskey today was brought to you by Tullamore Dew.
Oh, just the best. God, do I love a good, smooth, rich Irish whiskey. This is not an ad that's been paid for.
But if Tullamore Dew wants to give us some money,
or
we're not
send us some
say
free
no
merchandise.
Yeah.
Liquid.
I'd be happy.
Yeah.
Kirk Jones also wrote Waking Ned Devine. I don't know why it was changed, but the original British title was just Waking Ned, and North America changed it to Waking Ned Devine.
Oh.
Why the last name had to be put in?
Because I bet you they ran test audiences with the original name and people didn't like it.
Waking Ned?
A executive was like, it's too unclear. Put the guy's last name in it. Then it sounds better. Sounds charming or something. Because Waking Ned doesn't sound as good as Waking Ned Devine. It's the fact that the last name is Devine, I think, that really kind of makes and sells this title. It's also kind of a strange verbiage and vernacular in America as well. Anyways, I think Waking Ned Devine's the better title, but it's also the one that I've known for the last,
sure,
you know,
it's not a bad title.
20 plus years.
It's not a bad title. It just is interesting when North America has to change a title. I mean, I know that other countries change.
You know, the Avengers in
sure, I know.
Britain is different because of an old TV show. Like,
well, it's interesting, you know, like
things change.
Sorcerer's Stone was Philosopher's Stone. Because
nobody
American
in America knows what
kids
a philosopher
are too
is.
Dumb to know what a philosopher
but
is.
But we know what a sorcerer is. Yeah. Thanks, Disney. Eddie Izzard says that England and America are, you know, the same language. No, the same place separated by two common languages or something to that effect. You know, British English and Irish English are not the same as American English.
Sure.
And things get lost in translation sometimes, which is why if you read The Philosopher's Stone, it is so fucking British. It's so British in all the references. You know, then when you read the American version, it's drastically different. You know, it's even if it just comes down to what we call a train or, you know, a certain type of candy or something, like there are, you know, it's the same language separated by two continents.
Chose the wrong day to stop drinking milk. The music was composed by Sean Davey, born in Belfast, has worked on
kind of nothing that I recognize outside of Waking Ned Devine. I mean, it depends on, that might be the David Copperfield that, Daniel.
Was that David Copperfield that Dan Radcliffe was in?
I remember The Tailor of Panama with Pierce Brosnan and Jeffrey Rush. I saw it once forever and ever and ever ago. I couldn't tell you a thing about it. But what I could tell you is that those two men could take me to Panama. So I might, oh my God, and Jamie Lee Curtis? I might, ooh, and Brandon Gleeson. I might have to watch this movie. Daniel Radcliffe is in this?
Next, cinematography done by Henry Bram. Interestingly enough, you know, a movie like this, you wouldn't think, you know, because the director didn't really do a lot outside of, you know, England. Mm-hmm. And same thing with the composer and the writer, you know. It's interesting that the cinematographer has gone out and really kind of become a Hollywood director of photography. Like, he's credited for Guardians 2 and 3.
Oh.
He did The Suicide Squad.
So, wait a minute. The cinematographer of Waking Ned Divine. Is now James Gunn's, like...
James Gunn's guy, because he is the cinematographer for Superman as well.
The
one coming out in July.
Wow.
Randomly, I know. He also did the cinematography for Roadhouse in the 2024 one with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Roadhouse.
I know. of all the things,
the guy who did Waking Ned Divine.
Yeah.
That blows my mind in a way that I don't think I expected, because was he an infant, first of all? Like, how old is this guy? Because, you know, the 90s was a minute ago, I say, clutching my chest. He was born
in 1965 in England.
Damn!
And, yeah, he's known for his four movies that he's known for. Superman, which isn't even out yet. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, Roadhouse, and The Instigators, which is a...
Oh, yeah, that's that one with...
Matt Damon and Casey Affleck.
Yeah, those fuckers. You know what? Good for you, Henry Bram. Good for you. You've put in the work?
Well, and he also worked on Nanny McPhee, so he didn't just stop working with Kirk Jones with this film. He also... went on to do Nanny McPhee and then Flyboys.
God, Shackleton?
Yeah.
Shackleton's good.
Yeah, World War I movie with James Franco and Jean Reno.
Shackleton is about the British explorer who I think got stuck in the South Pole. But it stars Kenneth Branagh. It's a miniseries, and it stars Kenneth Branagh. And Jessie made me watch it during her Kenneth Branagh phase, which she had in high school. She was in love with Kenneth Branagh and I was in love with James Woods. And so we had to be best friends because nobody else understood it. God, I'm so glad she's my best friend.
He also did the cinematography for The Golden Compass, which overall was not the greatest film, but looks great.
All of these movies look great. He did The Flash, which...
The Legend of Tarzan.
Which is a beautiful movie, and I really actually like quite a lot.
He did The Flash, but the issues with Flash is the look of Flash is not down to the cinematographer.
No, that is true.
That is down to it's visual effects people.
Good for him. Director. You know what? He put in the work, and he must be a great guy. I mean, he does great work, and he must be a nice person if they wanted to, you know, if everybody wanted to keep working with him. So, you know, that's great. That's great. Good for him. I'm pleasantly shocked that he did. But the cinematography of Waking Ned Divine is beautiful. When he's having that dream of Ned, when Jackie is dreaming of Ned and they're out on the boat in that golden lighting, that golden heaven, that's a gorgeous shot. So, and then when, like, the phone booth goes flying off the cliff and everything, perfect. No notes. Good for you, motherfucker.
Rotten Tomatoes has Waking Ned Divine at an 84% from critics and 88% from audiences.
That makes me so happy. I was a little worried because there are a lot of cute little British films that I love that are just have atrocious scores from critics. because they hate cute little British things, I guess. I'm not quite sure.
This, some people do not like British films.
Yeah, and, you know, some people aren't in the mood for feel-good movies about pensioners the way that we are. You know, like, the youngest person in this cast is, well, the little boy that hangs out with the priest a lot. Yikes. This movie, I'm glad that people appreciate this movie for as cute as it is. And it is, it's such a sweet little film.
Well, it was made for $3 million. Mm-hmm. Just a nice, even $3 million. It made $25 million domestically, $30 million internationally, for a total of $55 million.
That is a nice comeback. You know, good for them. Again, considering that the cast is a bunch of pensioners. Pensioners, folks, is the British term for retiree.
Waking Ned Devine won 9 awards. Nominated for another 8.
Good.
One of the winners was David Kelly, who plays Michael, and he won a Golden Satellite Award for Best Actor in a Motion Picture. And then people might recognize David Kelly because he did play Grandpa Joe in Tim Burton's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yes, he did, unfortunately. He was also in Stardust as the Watcher of the Wall.
The Wall. Yeah, that's right.
And he's just kind of a prolific British character actor. He's been in just a ton of shit, but it's all very British and, you know, occasionally rom-commy, like The Matchmaker and Laws of Attraction. But he was also apparently in the original Italian Job, so...
Mm.
You know, good for him. The man's been around for, well, had been around for ages. He is gone now.
As is most of the cast.
Yeah.
I mean, this is an older film.
Yeah.
With a much older cast. You got Ian Bannon, who I absolutely love in this movie.
Oh, Jackie is such a scoundrel, but you can't help but love him because he's such a nice guy.
He's credited as being in Braveheart as the leper. But I don't remember exactly who that was or what point he's on the screen. But an actor who's been around.
Oh, boy. Another man who did a lot of British stuff and also Ghost Dad. Ugh.
I mean, he's been in over 100 projects since the 1950s. So he's definitely an established British actor.
Oh, I have to watch that. The deep dives that I have gone down. Boy. Because of this movie, like, not only thinking about, like, my favorite small, adorably sweet British films, but also learning about new ones. There's a romantic adventure TV film from the UK called The Lady and the Highwayman that stars Hugh Grant. And I've never seen Hugh Grant trying to be not Hugh Grant more than he is posing in that picture right there. He looks all stern and like, oh, I'm a highwayman, I'm bad, I am dangerous, when he's Hugh fucking Grant, like Flopsy Bopsy. I have to watch this now. This is amazing.
Because you have to know why Hugh Grant is staring off into the distance like that.
Yeah, right? Like, I mean, it looks like the cover of a romance novel. I have to know. It's got to be so bad.
I hope I say her name right. Fionnuala Flanagan plays Annie, Ian's wife, Jackie's wife, Annie.
She has been, you know her mainly from Lost.
Say a lot of people would know her from Lost. She was also in The Others with,
was she the creepy old woman?
She's the creepy old woman who's the help.
Yes.
She's there. Her and her people, mm-hmm. I guess. She never, or her family, are there to help Nicole Kidman and her children.
Passover.
And,
right?
Yeah. And she is super creepy.
Obviously, again, this October, you're going to make me watch a good handful of scary movies, right?
It's very possible.
Can we watch that one again? Because I haven't seen The Others in years. It's one of the few horror films that I like.
It's true. And, I haven't watched The Others also in...
You know, it would be very interesting to watch years. It with this new sort of eye that we both have for films. Oh, it's so far away.
Tune in to...
our Halloween bonus episode.
In 7 months?
Ish. Yeah, the character of Annie in this movie is sort of the logic or the level-headedness. You know, she's such a loving wife, and she puts up with Jackie's bullshit. Because Jackie is very much this, you know, funny, big-hearted, but verbose and goofy guy. He likes to pull pranks on people that he loves. And they're gentle pranks, too, like making his wife think that they won the lottery. But he's also very sweet and generous. And, you know, you could tell that everybody in town really likes him. But he's also kind of the class clown. And Annie is the level-headed, like, no-nonsense sort of person who goes along with her husband's, you know, goofiness, for sure. But also knows when to be adult. And it's sort of like Caveman is a bit more the Annie role in this relationship. And I'm definitely the Jackie.
That sounds accurate.
Yeah. You know, you're level-headed. I'm loud and verbose. And somehow we even each other out nicely.
We also got James Nesbitt in this movie. Pig Finn.
Pig Finn. Oh, man. James Nesbitt. Everybody knows from The Hobbit. He was one of the...
Bofur.
Yes.
He's one of those British actors that's been around since the 80s.
He's just been around in everything.
Yeah, he's...
Like, and again, because I've watched a lot of the BBC throughout my life, or the BBCA, I should say, I've seen a lot of his stuff. And I'm always just sort of happy to see him. I know he's a comedian, too. So I've seen him do some of his stand-up stuff. Like, he's just a very funny guy. And he was one of the better parts of... all the dwarves, actually, in The Hobbit were really the only reason that I cared about that film. Because I actually genuinely cared about most of those characters. But even they couldn't save that movie in the end. But yeah, James Nesbitt in this film is a very sweet, sort of lovelorn local pig farmer. You know, he could find the love of his life if it just weren't for the pigs. The pigs, Finn, it's the pigs. Which I guess brings us to Susan Lynch, who played Maggie.
Oh, Maggie O'Toole.
But I would just like to point out that I tend to find that most Maggies with an E in their name are bitches. Whereas us, just I and no E's, we're the Maggies that are at it.
I don't know. Any other Maggies without E's? So I can't really compare.
Just Maggie in this movie, she's kind of a cow. I'm not going to say she's an outright bitch, but she's a bit of a cow. And I just sort of like, all she does is get after Finn for smelling like pigs. She could love him if it weren't for the pigs. But like... First of all, the man is trying. He's showering. He's using the fancy soaps that Jackie gives him.
All the fancy soap, all the different fruit flavors.
I've even got a raspberry one. Yeah. That'll do.
Try the raspberry.
Yeah. And she just, like, she kind of leads him on about who's the father of her son, who is the only child on this island of 42 people. Ugh, those aren't good prospects there. The boy's going to have to leave town eventually. He is way too close with the priest. But only because we view that now these days because of everything. She leads on Finn about being the father of her child.
Yes.
You know, it turns out that, spoilers, by the way, folks, we are going to be spoiling the hell out of Waking Ned Divine here. It turns out that Ned Divine himself is the father of the little boy, which, you know, get a girl if you like that old man face. I mean, they said he was 66. He looked 94.
Yeah, he didn't look 66.
They're like, oh, he's 66 years old, and then it shows this corpse that's been in the ground for 4 years already. Like, the guy had lived a rough life. But I didn't like Maggie watching this movie this time, because all she really does is mope around and lead on poor Finn.
Poor Finn.
And just brag on his cute pigs. Like...
And there's nothing wrong with him or his pigs.
No, and he's desperate for her. Yeah. And she's just like, I don't know, maybe. Should the rich guy do it? I don't know, maybe. And it's just sort of like, damn, bitch.
Maggie.
Yes, Caveman.
Why do we love Waking Ned Divine so much?
Well, the movie is about a very small town off of an island, you know, on a small island off of Ireland. It's about the town resident who play the lottery, as a lot of people do, in hopes of more money and more riches. The two main characters, Jackie and Michael, who are longtime best friends, discover that somebody in their town has the winning lottery ticket, and then they go set about in a madcap adventure to find who that person is. And then everybody else is suspicious that it's them, and there's all a bunch of back and forth about it, and a chicken dinner, and it's all quite funny and quite charming. But then they discover that their longtime friend, Ned Devine, is the winner of said lottery ticket. Ned dies upon finding out dies of shock finding out that he's the winner. And we know that because when you see his corpse, he's smiling. And then, but he's already signed the back of his ticket. Yes. So Jackie and Michael then go about impersonating Ned and getting the town involved in order to get the nearly £7 million lottery and split it amongst all of them. And then calamity ensues. It is a movie about a crime. It is about fraud. But it's so sweet and charming.
So sweet and charming.
And like this little town of little people. And they're all so funny and they're all so unique. You get instantly that Jackie and Michael are old friends. Like the chemistry between those two is deep and profound. You can see the love and the goofy joy that Jackie has with Annie. You know, you get to see the landlord of the local pub. You get to find out about Maggie and her son and Finn and the pigs. You know, there's the rich guy, the rich womanizer in town. Although I don't know who he's womanizing and or like they call him a bit of a ladies man. But like you see everybody in this town. It's all a bunch of retirees. And, like, four young people. So I guess he had to go off island or something. I don't know. Maybe he has his reputation from Dublin followed him or something. I don't know. But, like, you know, the rich man is in love with Maggie and wants to give her and her son a good life. But she's in love with Finn, but she doesn't love Finn's pigs. And Finn's in love with her, but he doesn't want to get rid of the pigs. And that's a whole thing. And we love this movie because it's sweet. And it's funny. And it's charming. And it gives you hope. And, you know, there's the villain of the story is this crotchety old cheap ass bitch, Lizzie Quinn, who rides around in her little, you know, motorized wheelchair, even though she can walk. Like, that is how lazy she is. Although I would argue to say I don't think she would spend the money on a sort of scooter like that, but she uses it instead of walking. And she is the local bitch. You know, she's too cheap to pay for her repairs. She's always trying to scam groceries for cheaper. Like, you know, she's a shrew. She doesn't want to go along with the thing because she wants more money. They've got to fight her. And ultimately her end is just so satisfying and justifying. And, like, perfect. I love the way that Lizzie Quinn gets taken out. But, like, you know, it's just pure. It's a cup of tea on a fall afternoon. It's a hug from a good friend. It's one of those movies you put on.
It's a feel-good movie.
It's a feel-good movie.
And
it's...
I love feel-good movies that involve, like, little towns. Mm-hmm. Little, like, 100 people.
Oh, it's
people.
So quaint. It's so fucking quaint.
And like another movie that I was thinking of that's very similar to the idea of just small town English countryside kind of movie takes place in Wales is the movie The Englishman Who Went Up a Hill But Came Down a Mountain from 1995 starring Hugh Grant. I know that's probably a really random film for a lot of people. I doubt a lot of people have even heard of it, let alone watched it, but it is such a...
It's so... I haven't seen it in years and years, but I would watch it tonight. I remember it was just so sweet.
Hugh Grant is charming. You know, it's during the best of Hugh Grant, you know, mid-90s.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's got that small town feel where these small group of people get together... for essentially the greater good.
Mm-hmm. The greater good.
The greater good.
Yeah, it's those kind of small town movies just
pull yeah, they make everything better.
Pull your heartstrings yeah. and you're like, oh, that's so sweet and quaint. And wouldn't I love to live in a little area like that where everybody just comes yeah, together, works together.
It's like it's as close to Hobbit living as we can get as modern
maybe
folk.
That's why I like it so much, because I is, love is Hobbit living
in the Irish countryside, basically. Which, you know, I mean, Tolkien based the Shire off of the British countryside. I really love smaller, cuter Irish British films. There's Miss Pettigrew Lives for a Day. There's Little Voice, Four Weddings and a Funeral, Green Fingers with a young Clive Owen, fucking Calendar Girls and Emma. And one of my favorites is called Blow Dry. And the cast is unbelievable for this small little British film. Alan Rickman, Natasha Richardson, may she rest in peace, Rachel Griffiths, Bill Nighy, Rosemary Harris, like just Hugh Bonneville is in this film. Heidi Klum is in this film. And even David Bradley, who played, what's his face on Game of Thrones that eats his children. He also played the caretaker in Hogwarts.
I know the character you're talking about. I just can't remember. I don't know the actor's name.
Yeah, David Bradley. Nonetheless, this is an adorable little British film about haircutters. Right? And it's great. The problem with it is that they tried to get Josh Hartnett to be British.
Oh, boy.
And then Rachel Lee Cook is, like, the American that shows up in town for some reason. Like, she's the American niece or granddaughter of one of the town folks, so she's there. And the movie is kind of centered on them, and they have no chemistry whatsoever. And their acting is so bad. But the rest of the film, right? Fucking Alan Rickman and Natasha Richardson and Bill Nighy and haircutting, like a fancy haircutting competition is what it's about. And I love this film. But nobody's ever seen it, and the critics don't like it, but it makes me happy. It's one of those gentle, silly little British films that are perfect. And they make me happy, you know? It is sort of the perfect Saturday afternoon or Sunday morning lazy film when you need something that's hopeful and uplifting. And I think that's why you like this movie so much, K-Man, is because I go a lot more for those sort of sappy movies than you do. You know, I'm 1,000 times more likely to sit down and watch Pride and Prejudice with a cup of tea and a, you know, a blanket and just, you know, cuddled up and just be like, oh, Britain. Your sort of like comfort films are your childhood animated classics, your 80s action adventure films, your, you know, absolutely like The Winter Soldier and Civil War, because those are like our shared MCU comfort movies. But I'm glad that you like this one so much. Did I show it to you for the first time?
Yes, you introduced me to this movie.
I think the reason why is I want to say it was my buddy Brian, who was my man of honor at our little wedding. He sat me down and was like, have you seen Waking Ned Divine? Hmm. And I was like, no. And in high school, I was such a little Anglophile, like, and I was so obnoxious about it, guys. I'm like, I know who Kenneth Branagh is. I've already read the Harry Potter books. Like, ooh, look at me. I was such a little Anglophile. You know, oh, I've seen, you know, this movie. Have you seen? Oh, this British. Oh, you know, like I was an asshole because I was a fucking 15-year-old and in love with something. So, of course, I was an asshole about it. But so he had me watch Waking Ned Divine. And, you know, ever since then, I've had to show it to everybody else. I probably got this DVD at like Sam Goody or fucking FYE or maybe Best Buy would have had it. But I don't think that, like, you know, our local Walmart didn't carry this film. I had to go hunting for this one since it was an import. And it's just so cute and sweet. I don't know. Do you have other, like, beloved comfort movies or, like, beloved, like, British comfort things that you're into right now or have watched or love? Let's talk about comfort films, because that's what this film is, right? Ultimately, it's a comfort
film. Right, yeah, this film is a comfort film because it makes you feel good and happy. And
yeah.
You like, of course, the outcome. It's funny. Mm-hmm. It's got some great humor in it, which, of course, helps.
And it also is, like, it makes you cry a little bit. You know, when Jackie's giving the eulogy at the end, and because the lotto man who thinks that Michael is Ned Devine is there at the funeral, at Ned Devine's funeral, unknowingly, they have to say that the funeral's for Michael. And when Jackie gives him the eulogy to his face, oh, fuck, I cried like a baby.
Yeah, yeah. When he's standing there giving the eulogy and looking at Michael at the same time. And that shows what great of an actor David Kelly is. Just the way he's looking back at him, smiling, knowing that he's saying these things as if his friend had actually died. It was really sweet. You know, when it comes to British films, I tend to go a little more with their comedy. I find British comedy sometimes funnier than American comedy. I grew up on Weird Al and Monty Python. That humor is my humor. So when I get to be introduced to films like this and Death at a Funeral, I mean, I know we talked about Spaced not too long ago when we did Baby Driver.
Oh, man. Spaced is such a funny, sweet little show.
I recently had rewatched through Fawlty Towers. Which...
You put Basil in the Ratatouille?
You put Basil in the Ratatouille? Yes!
My dad says that probably, if not daily, then weekly. And because of him, I too, anytime I see Basil, if it's not out loud or then it's in my head, I say, you put Basil in the Ratatouille? Because fucking Basil Fawlty is one of the greatest characters ever written of all time.
It's a great series.
That's such a good series.
I think it's streaming on something right now, but Keeping Up Appearances, of course, oh my is... God.
The McKay residence, the lady of the house speaking. Another... See, I watch a lot of this British stuff because my dad watched a lot of it. My dad loved Monty Python. My dad loves Monty Python. And he loved Keeping Up Appearances. And he loved Trading Spaces, which was the original reality show where two neighbors would, like, swap rooms of their house and design it for them. And, like, I know the American one got squirrely. The British one was off the fucking chain absurd and ridiculous. There is a great show called Ground Force where...
Yeah, I know Ground Force.
Alan Titmarsh? I don't remember his name, but him and a group of people would go in and, like, revamp people's gardens. And then there was Cash in the Attic. Did you ever watch Cash in the Attic?
I've heard of Cash in the Attic, but I never watched it.
Oh, my God. Cash in the Attic is great. It's sort of like if you took the, what's that traveling appraisal show that was on PBS that was really big for a long time? Where people would come to them with their family heirlooms, and then they'd be like, oh, it's worth this much.
Right.
At auction.
Yeah. I don't remember being on PBS.
But it's sort of, so Cash in the Attic was sort of like that. People, like, experts would go in and rummage around people's houses and then find pieces that they were like, well, actually, this was painted by Beethoven in the 9th century, and it's worth upwards of £30 million. And the people go, oh my God, that's amazing. And then they take it to a random local auction. Like, if it was the big stuff, they'd take it to Sotheby's, but usually as a random auction. Yeah. And people would get anywhere from, like, a couple $100s to millions of pounds for some of their shit. And just watching them go through the auction process was... honestly, everything. There was a time where British television was just so pure.
I mean, you do nothing but watch British television.
Oh my God. So, let's talk about it, right? Right now.
Oh boy. Yeah, I mean, I think everybody... So, Ned Devine is a great movie. Anyway.
Right now, the world is kind of a shit show. Things aren't great across the board in our country, in other countries, in the world at large. And I have had to turn to comfort over the last few months. And that comfort has come from two sources, most of all. The Great Pottery Throwdown, especially the season that just ended, which, by the way, is a little British competition show, much like the Great British Bake Off, in terms of like wholesomeness and kindness, but 1,000 times better. It's about pottery, and the judges are... I have never seen a pair of judges on a reality competition show like each other more than Keith Brimer Jones and Rich Miller, the judges on that show. Those two are the JD and Turk of pottery and reality competition shows. They're amazing. Anyways, that show is like 1,000% pure comfort. But then there's the repair shop. And you've made fun of me in the past when I've tried to talk about the repair shop on this podcast. But it's all that I have been intaking when it comes to pop culture lately, or like when I have my free time, when it's not like, oh, we absolutely have to watch Daredevil, like, oh, or we have to watch a movie for a podcast, oh, we're gonna watch a movie just for fun, like Timeline or Beauty and the Beast or whatever. If I am by myself and I have got the TV on, it's on The Repair Shop. And it's just this gentle little show where people bring their family heirlooms to these expert British craftspeople at this fucking, like, living museum in the English countryside where they worked in a thatched roof barn. It is as British as you can fucking get. And people bring these stained glass windows or old clocks or fucking jewelry or paintings or ceramics or teddy bears or whatever. And they give their sob story like, oh, this belonged to my grandpa and he was the best grandpa in the world. And he served in the war and he died a few years back. And this clock's all I've had of him. And unfortunately, I dropped the clock and now it's broken. And then fucking Steve, the clock guy, takes it and he's like, oh, well, please let me fix this to you. And then he puts on his 3 pairs of glasses and he fixes the clock and then gives it back to the woman. And then she cries and then Steve cries and then I cry and then you cry, caveman. And everybody cries because it is pure. It is so pure. And that's what I need right now. Like, I can see this little like smirk on your face, my love, where I'm going off on this thing that I care about. And you're just like, oh, Maggie, what a goon. But it's what I need. I've gotten off of social media for the most part. I actually need to delete Instagram off my phone again because I brought it up for one reason and now I need to get rid of it. But I don't look at social media anymore. I check the news once a day to kind of get a gist of what's going on in the world. And then the rest of the time, I'm choosing to prioritize my own comfort. And what I need is gentle British kindness. I think what I need is gentle kindness, but since we're not getting that in our country right now, I've got to look elsewhere. And the British are so good at gentle kindness. Waking Ned Divine is a gentle and kind film. You know, Jackie kind of originally wants to find out who the winner of the lotto is so that he'd literally be his friend in, you know, and get some money, right? Like, he wants a handout. That's what he's going for. He specifically says several times that whoever wins the lottery, he hopes gives some money to him.
Yeah.
But then he realizes that it's not just about him and it is about the whole town. And he goes about trying to commit fraud. You know, he's lying to the lotto guy. They're lying to everyone. Like, they're full on committing fraud, but he's doing it so that everybody can win. That's beautiful, because he is a good and kind man who loves his little town of Tullymore. Like, I don't know if you clocked it, but when everybody thinks that he's the lotto winner because he's shelling out the chicken dinner and he's buying people pints, yeah, and, you know, he's spending money to make money, essentially. People would be asking him, like, oh, are you thinking of moving, Michael? And he's like, why? I already live in the best place in the world, Tullymore. And then somebody else is like, oh, you know, Jackie, I heard you might be getting a pool. And he's like, why would I get a pool when I can go swim in the loch for free? Like, he loves his town so much. Yeah. And that love is what literally causes him to commit crime. But so that everybody can win. And then the other winner of this movie is the bartender at the local pub, because there's kind of no other place to spend any of your money.
It's a town where you're just buying food.
Food.
And
Guinness.
Beer.
Yeah. And whiskey.
Yeah.
And that man is set to become the local
millionaire.
Yeah,
the only pastime,
yeah,
it seems, is going to your local pub, and there's only one.
Yeah.
And that guy is just, like, constantly handing out drinks.
Just fucking rich beyond means. So, I'm doing the math right now of how much they win versus in inflation.
Oh, boy.
So, the lottery win, by the way, I mean, they're not just doing this for, like, 50,000. And at one point, they are like, oh, it's 500,000. And I was like, oh, God, remember when 500,000 was a lot of money? But it turns out that the lottery, the amount of that they're set to win is 6,894,620 pounds, which means that everybody in town gets a split take of $132,588. That's pre-tax. That equates today to the 6 million pound, 6.8 million pound lottery win is would now be a $12,946,029 windfall, which gets everybody $24,962. If that movie were made today, that's how much their each share is worth in inflation today with inflation. And that's in pounds, by the way.
It went from 130 to 24?
No, 248.
$248,962. Gotcha. Almost a quarter of $1 million. Dollars.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a lot of money. I would help my small town.
Even 130,000.
Oh, yeah. The $6 million, the 6 million pound lotto win would have been 8 million in American dollars. So, pounds to dollars. What is, back to the film, since we've gone off in several tangents. What is your favorite scene in this film?
I mean, I love when they're trying to, the back and forth on the bike, riding naked or riding shirtless. It's hilarious.
It's so funny. There are some very funny smash cuts in this film.
Yes.
Where they make a joke and then they smash cut to something.
Yeah,
it's quite humorous. And then, yes, you do get to see a little old man riding naked on a motorcycle, which you've got to imagine hurts like hell. I couldn't imagine riding naked on a motorcycle, but especially a guy.
It probably wouldn't be as bad as you think.
That man's old ass balls just
vibrating
the entire time.
Think about it though. If I can ride a bicycle with just bike shorts, a motorcycle naked wouldn't be as bad because the seat is much bigger on a motorcycle than it is a bicycle.
His poor balls though.
Eh.
Anyhow.
They'll understand later.
they're about to make $130,000.
That's right. It doesn't matter what happens to them.
They'll take a little bashing. Plus, like, he's in his 60s. They've been bashed around a bit.
Take a little bashing to get a little cash in.
One of my favorite scenes in this film is, and this will spoil it a little bit, but at this point, whatever. If you've known us, you've probably seen this film because I've probably made you watch it. And if you haven't, go watch it.
Go watch it.
It's just a perfect little film for a couple of hours. It's literally just a Sunday afternoon hug. When Lizzie Quinn is on her way to the, you know, all the phones are, there's a big storm and it knocks out all the phones on the island and they haven't been fixed yet. So Lizzie Quinn, the local bitch, is riding on her little scooter to the one payphone that works that's out for some reason on the side of a scenic coastal mountain road at a curve, no less. Perfect place for a phone booth, for a public phone booth. Yeah. The only public phone booth on the island.
Perfect location.
Yeah, it's on Dead Man's Curve.
Everybody knows about that location. They're like, oh yeah, that's the public phone.
And so she's, first of all, she's riding out to there on her scooter and her scooter breaks down. So she stands up, kicks it and starts walking along, which is proof that she'd never needed it in the first place. And then she's calling the, you know, Irish Lottery in Dublin at the same time as everybody's in town celebrating and the two musicians in the corner, one on a fiddle, are playing a song and the fiddle guy is just going at it.
So entertaining.
Just going at it. And it keeps cutting back to him playing that, the town watching him play this like epic solo, and then Lizzie Quinn typing in the numbers, right? And what ends up happening is she gets through to the lottery. She's like, you know, hello, I'd like to report. And then the car that the lotto officiant, the guy who is there to make sure that Michael O'Sullivan is Ned Devine, he has really bad allergies the whole film because he's out in the Irish countryside. And he sneezes, almost crashes into the phone booth, but manages to swerve in time, but he accidentally swerves in front of the returning priest who's back on island after surgery or something. He's been off for a while. The priest ends up swerving, hitting the phone booth, not knowing that Lizzie is in there, and then the phone booth just rockets off the side of the fucking cliff. And as soon as it lands in a blistering crash on the ocean, or on the you know, beach, the fiddler's string breaks and he can't play anymore, and the whole town goes fucking nuts. I love that moment.
long story short,
I love that moment. It is just so well shot and well played. It's such a fun comeuppance for this bitchy villain. And, you know, nobody in town knows that she's gone. They probably won't for a while. You know, now their shares are all about to get a little bit bigger. But also, she's just such a bitch, and it's just so much fun watching her get thrown off of a cliff. It's such a brutal end for just this bitchy, cheap character. But that's definitely one of my favorite parts of the movie. The ending. Okay, man, do you have anything particular about Ireland, since it is St. Patrick's Day, that you love? I would like to say that I love their alcohol.
I mean, Guinness and Irish whiskey is...
Fucking Guinness and Irish whiskey is... one of my favorite things,
and I...
Some of God's...
Love watching the Tri-Channel.
Greatest joys.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I get to know a bit of what the people of Ireland are like through that channel, because it is just...
Random Irish people trying
Irish
different
people
things.
That you know, friends and of the producers, and just come on and try things, and you,
it's anything from liquor to lollipops, and
you really get to
between.
You really get to know their personalities.
Yeah,
man, I wish I could
hang out with these
go
guys.
To Ireland and go have a drink with one of these one of these people. But
I also love their music. Shout out to Glenn Hansard and Damien Rice, who have been the spokespeople of my heart for years.
Definitely a couple
years.
Of my favorite Irish singers right there.
And it just, like, I want to go there so badly. I don't think I'd come back. Like, I could just happily be, you know, like working in a pub for the rest of my life, wearing thick sweaters and... not caring about my wrinkles.
Listening
like,
to Irish
fiddles.
And...
Yeah, I would be so happy. But I know it's not great over there, and there's actually a really bad housing crisis, and their government's not top-notch like none of ours are. I mean, what are you going to do about that? But, you know, it's still... I think it's the idea of Ireland, you know, that sort of like fairy tale of Ireland that we Americans hold so dear. We love this film. We love the Irish. We love each other.
Maggie, what would you give... Waking Ned Devine out of 5 stars.
Fuck it. It's a 5 for me. It's just such a perfect, happy little film. It's everything I want it to be. Funny, heartfelt, beautiful, you know, joyous.
I can't think of, like, there's nothing really that I'm, like, upset about.
No.
Or would change.
Because, and also this movie is always there for us when we need it, like a warm hug.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a 5-star.
I was going to give
comfort.
It 4.5, but I was
I
like...
I thought that, too. But,
but
like,
why not give it a 5? Like, what's in the way?
If nothing else, the cinematography in that scene where Jackie is talking to Ned in a dream and they're on that golden, you know, golden ocean, it's so beautiful. Like, that gets an extra 0.5-star bump. Like, this movie's perfect.
Well, I think Maggie and I have definitely been enjoying our St. Patrick's Day celebrations today.
A little bit.
Cheers.
Cheers. What would you expect from a St. Patrick's Day movie mingle but some drunken debauchery?
That's right.
And it could have been on a lot worse things.
Yes, we could have
been... gone full Chicago Irish on you.
I was going to say we could have just done a lot of cocaine.
Oh.
This is a whole show of us just snorting cocaine.
That would be terrible. We've never done cocaine.
I know. Which would be quite the...
be the last ever episode of Movie Mingle, that's for damn sure.
And that was the last time anybody heard of Caveman and Maggie.
If we were going to do coke throughout a movie, it should have been to The Wolf of Wall Street, though. So we did lose that opportunity.
Yeah. We randomly just chose Waking Ned Divine instead of instead of the obvious.
Yep, it was just a lot of bumps the whole movie. What? How did we get here?
So, Maggie.
Yes, Caveman.
I have two questions for you.
Hit it.
Dicen que por las noches no más se le iban puro llorar. Dicen que no comía.
Yeah.
Why?
Why?
Why would you do that?
I think you know why I would do that. So, Maggie.
Yeah.
I have two questions for you.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Would the presence of Oscar Isaac have made Waking Ned Divine a better movie?
I mean, if he sang like that, maybe. But actually, no. I don't think that we needed him whatsoever in this film. Because it is perfect already. And admittedly, his gorgeous face would stand out a bit. The lone Latin man in a small island off the coast of Ireland.
Be a little bit of a shock
to the
locals.
To put in this just gorgeous man from Latin America and shove him into Ireland. Yeah, that would be a bit odd. Also, I don't think that any of the locals would understand their unbridled lust that they have for him.
Why am I all of a sudden just super attracted to this guy?
Yeah, like, why am I so horny for that man?
I need to just be next to him.
At all times. Yeah. Sorry, Finn and your pigs, but this Maggie's going after someone else.
Yeah, I don't think Maggie's going to be paying any attention to
Finn. I don't care if he smelled like pigs. I'd help shower the stench off.
Well, Maggie, question number
boy.
Two.
Yeah.
Which character would Oscar Isaac have played?
Okay, so hear me out. In about 10 years, they remake this movie for a Latin American audience.
Okay.
Oscar Isaac is Jackie. Pedro Pascal.
Oh, my goodness.
Is Michael.
I would totally watch that.
Well, you would totally watch this movie. And Annie could be played by Penelope Cruz, right? And then, like, the bitchy old Lizzie Quinn could be played by whomever, you know?
Yeah.
Fucking Tiffany Haddish or somebody. And then, like, they remake this movie the much in the way that they remade Death at a Funeral for an American audience. They remake it for a Latin American audience. And it's charming as fuck. And it's Oscar Isaac and Pedro Pascal doing the buddy comedy that we've always wanted them to, but it's wholesome and sweet at the same time. And also maybe they're lovers and they make out. But I definitely see Oscar as Jackie and Pedro as Michael. You could swap it if you wanted to, but I think that Oscar's got the smarmy charm that Jackie needs, and Pedro's got the like innocent charm that Jackie needs. And it would be amazing. Hollywood, make that movie.
Dicen por las noches, no más se le iban puro llorar.
Where did you find this?
Dicen que no comía.
Oh my God, thank you. What is that from? It's perfect.
YouTube.
Oh, I love it. And that has been this month's bonus episode of Movie Mingle on Waking Ned Divine for St. Patrick's Day. We hope that you enjoyed it as much as we barely remembered putting it together for you. we're happy, folks, and what else do you want? And safe. Everybody's fine. It's great. Join us next week for our regularly scheduled program where we will be talking about Hereditary, which is a movie I finally have to watch and I'm super angry about, and all the good fun stuff to come on Movie Mingle as well in the upcoming weeks. You can always find us on Instagram, Threads, and Letterboxd at Movie Mingle. You can find us on YouTube at Movie Mingle Podcast, and write us any of your thoughts and questions, comments, and concerns at MovieMinglePod@gmail.com. We do love hearing from our fans, even if that question is just, what the hell was that episode? You guys rambled for an hour and none of it made sense. Take care of yourselves out there in this big wide world. If you're going to go out and celebrate St. Patrick's Day, please call an Uber or take a DD with you. But if you're at home and you have a shot of whiskey, then fill to me the parting glass and drink a health whatever befalls. Then gently rise and softly call. Good night and go mingle to you all. Bye!
Are you an effective team?
We are an effective team.
Let them fight.
How did you just do that?
I'm a really good lawyer.
Here on Caladan, we've ruled by air power and sea power. On Arrakis, we need to cultivate desert power.
Welcome, Mr. Beach. What's that bar? I'm a little confused.
Oh, we wouldn't want that, would we?
I don't
want
to brag, but I will. I was in the Avengers.
The Avengers?
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you. What is that?
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Toga. Toga. Toga.